If you grew up in the 1980s and 1990s like me and my sister did, then you may remember the popularity of fan clubs. For example, if you are a big fan of Duran Duran, you could sign up for their fan club. For a fee, you could receive band updates via mail and a membership card. Or, if you are a Babysitter's Club enthusiast, you could sign up for their fan club and receive newsletters, a banner, photo album, and posters all about the book series. When I was in my early 20s, I started my very own fan club, but this time, it was for Anne of Green Gables, the 1985 film that me, my sister, and several of my former colleagues at the time were huge fans of. So much so that during off shifts for my job as a wilderness therapy guide, my colleagues, who were close friends, would gather together to watch the movies. We loved the movie and movies so much that we lovingly referred to Anne of Green Gables as AOGG. I even purchased every club member an Anne of Green Gables pen from the Canada Pavilion at Epcot in Walt Disney World when I traveled there with my sister. Needless to say, as an adult, I was and am obsessed with that film. Anne of Green Gables was always in the rotation for me and my sister growing up. I can remember watching the movie at home from the comfort of our evergreen red and navy blue plaid couch and also looking up at the TV VCR cart from my desk in elementary school to watch it. I know if my sister and I could talk now about our favorite movies from our childhood, without question, I know she would bring this one up. Today's show format is intended for those individuals who have already seen the film, ideally on several occasions. If you have not seen the film, I'd strongly, strongly encourage you to do so before listening to the show, as there will be many spoilers about the plot and characters, and many of the inside jokes I will make about the film will also not make a lot of sense. And if you have seen the movie many times, you may not find my jokes all that funny, but I think they are, and that's what matters. Anyways, we won't be going through the movie scene by scene, but rather we will discuss some background information and history behind the movie. Emphasis on the very first movie, information about the cast, fun facts, and other tidbits for the AOGG fan. So, grab your straw hat, put your hair into pigtails, and pack up your carpet bag. Here we go. Hello, and thank you so very much for tuning into the Pop Culture Retrospective Podcast, a show inspired by, and in memory of, my big sister Rebecca, and her love for all things pop culture, especially the people, places, and things of the 1980s, 1990s, and early 2000s. My name is Amy Lewis, and I'm your captain aboard this pop culture time machine. You are tuning into episode number 34, Anne of Green Gables, the beloved television miniseries that first graced the small screen in the mid-1980s. Before we get into the film itself, let's discuss the origins of this timeless classic, which was a book written by Lucy Maud Montgomery, commonly known as L.M. Montgomery. As you will soon learn, there are many parallels between L.M. Montgomery and the character of Anne Shirley. She was born on what was then called Clifton, but now New London, Prince Edward Island, on November 30, 1874, to parents Hugh John Montgomery and Clara Woolner McNeil. Sadly, her mother died of tuberculosis when Montgomery was just a baby. She would go on to live with her maternal grandparents, Alexander and Lucy Woolner McNeil. Since she was an only child living with an older couple, she found many creative ways to entertain herself. She enjoyed reading, writing, and being out in nature. She also started keeping a journal at the ripe old age of 9. She had two imaginary friends growing up, one named Katie and the other named Lucy. Her friends lived in a fairy room behind the bookcase in her grandparents' sitting room. As a child, Montgomery enjoyed spending time with her aunt, uncle, and cousins. When she was just 16 years old, Montgomery had her first poem published entitled On Cape La Force, which was featured in a Prince Edward Island newspaper. Later, she would study at a teacher's college called Prince of Wales College, and there she earned her teacher's license. She finished a two-year program in just 1 year and graduated with honors. Montgomery would teach for a few years and also continue to write on the side, aka turn-of-the-century side hustle. Or maybe it's side saddle. That was terrible. Anyways, Montgomery sent her writings to publications all over Canada, the United States, and Britain. She faced a lot of rejection, but eventually her persistence paid off, and she would eventually start to earn a living from her writing and transitioned out of teaching. Montgomery wrote Anne of Green Gables, or AOGG, in 1905. She sent the manuscript out to several publishers, but each one rejected it. Are you freaking kidding me? So, feeling discouraged, she put the story away in a hat box for a few years. She stumbled across it again in 1907 and decided to try to get it published again. Thankfully, a publishing company based out of Boston took a chance, and thank God they did, because it was an immediate success, selling 19,000 copies within its first 5 months of release. She was now able to make a very comfortable living from her writing. According to Britannica.com, here's a synopsis of the Anne of Green Gables story and subsequently the movie, which we will discuss a bit more momentarily. Anne of Green Gables, children's novel by Canadian author Lucy Maud Montgomery, published in 1908. The work, a sentimental but charming coming-of-age story about a spirited and unconventional orphan girl who finds a home with elderly siblings, became a classic of children's literature and led to several sequels. Matthew Cuthbert and his sister Marilla live in Avonlea on Canada's Prince Edward Island. Needing help on their farm, Green Gables, they apply to adopt a boy from an orphanage. By mistake, however, a red-haired, freckled-faced 11-year-old girl named Anne Shirley is sent to the siblings. While Matthew instantly takes to Anne, Marilla is unsure about keeping her. However, the cheerful and highly imaginative Anne gradually transforms the joyous lives of shy Matthew and prim Marilla, and they come to view her as their daughter. However, not everything about Avonlea is idyllic, and the quick-tempered Anne has two nemesis, the hypercritical Mrs. Rachel Lynde, who she eventually wins over, and Gilbert Blythe, a classmate that insults Anne by calling her carrots. She is sensitive about her looks, especially her red hair, and sets off a long-simmering feud. The two become friends by the end of the book and marry in a later sequel. Impulsive and sometimes mischievous, Anne has many misadventures, such as accidentally dyeing her hair green. Anne of Green Gables was inspired by a newspaper story, and Montgomery infused the work with her own girlhood experiences and the rural life and traditions of Prince Edward Island. Although initially rejected by several publishers, the novel was a huge success upon publication. Mark Twain called Anne the most lovable child in fiction since Lewis Carroll's Alice. Anne of Green Gables was adapted for film, stage, and television. Although Montgomery was not interested in continuing the story, she wrote several sequels that traced Anne's life from girlhood to motherhood. However, they were less popular than the original novel. End quote. On a personal note, Montgomery was linked to two different men before eventually marrying Reverend Ewan MacDonald. They would go on to have three sons, Chester, Hugh, who sadly died during childbirth, and Stuart. In addition to dealing with the pain of losing one of her children, Montgomery also had to cope with her husband's mental illness. Early on, he showed signs of depression and later a serious depressive disorder referred to as melancholia. His mood apparently changed constantly. He could be exhausted and hard to talk to one moment and extremely agitated another. Her husband got so ill that he was no longer able to preach and he had to resign. Her oldest son was also reportedly in trouble at times. He could be dishonest and take things from other people without permission. As they got older, Montgomery's husband's mental health continued to decline. He reportedly started to hear voices and had delusions. Montgomery, too, also dealt with depression, and according to some accounts, she and her husband were periodically dependent on barbiturates. An avid journal writer, many of Montgomery's later entries describe feeling hopeless and that the world had gone mad. She remained a professional writer, though, for the rest of her life, but on April 24, 1942, she was found dead in her Toronto home. Initial reports said that she died as a result of coronary thrombosis. However, a little over 10 years ago, on the 100th anniversary of Montgomery's first book publication, her granddaughter revealed a deep family secret. This is an excerpt from an article from CBC News. In an essay in the Globe and Mail on Saturday, Kate MacDonald Butler said Montgomery committed suicide. She said there was a note, which she's never seen, but she was told it asked for forgiveness. McDonald Butler said it seemed appropriate to lift the secrecy on the 100th anniversary of the publishing of Montgomery's first and most famous book. She was inspired to reveal the truth because of a series published in The Globe on mental health, and she hoped it would help get rid of the stigma of mental illness. Society has the idea that depression happens to other people, she wrote, and in particular, that it doesn't happen to our heroes and icons. Lucy Maud Montgomery published about 500 short stories and poems and 20 novels, 19 of which are set on PEI. There has been a lot of discussion in the online Montgomery community about the article, said Mark Leggett, chair of the L.M. Montgomery Institute in Charlottetown. Leggett said comments among the 600 members of the Kindred Spirits list have been varied. Things like, you know, there has been rumors in the community for years, or I'm so surprised and shocked, and a very common one is, it's nice to see the family use such a prominent figure to educate people about mental illness and the issues associated with that, he said. It's actually quite a range of things, to a large degree, reflect the issues that Kate rose in the article. Leggett said he didn't know it was coming, but he was not surprised that such a creative and well-loved author as Ellen Montgomery suffered from a mental illness. The news that Montgomery killed herself will likely encourage families of people who have committed suicide to get help, said Reed Burke, executive director of the Canadian Mental Health Association on PEI. Burke said McDonald Butler's essay brings home the message that mental illness affects people of all types, even famous authors. It's very positive to see her stepping forward, making sure that people understand that this is not a new issue. This is an issue that people dealt with for years, he said. After all this time, it is actually becoming more acceptable when they come forward and talk about how her grandmother struggled. There's that kind of myth that if you don't talk about it, it will go away. And it doesn't go away. It affects families and the survivors for years. Amen to that. Burke said the family's decision to reveal how Montgomery died shows that great strides have been made in recent years to destigmatize mental illness. Both Montgomery and her husband, Ewan McDonald, suffered from depression. She died in 1942 at the age of 67. He died a year later. McDonald Butler said she discussed revealing Montgomery's suicide with her family and that they agreed. CBC News spoke with Dr. Mary Rubio, Canada's best-known Montgomery scholar, who declined to be interviewed but did say the note and the context around it will be part of her upcoming Montgomery biography. End quote. I guess it just goes to show that mental illness, depression, and anxiety are not new phenomenons. They go back generation after generation, and that for many people, no matter how seemingly successful they are on the outside, sometimes there is a lot going on the inside. Things going on inside that even the closest family and friends may never know about or fully understand, even when they think they do. I know that all too well. Despite her deep sadness and grief, Ellen Montgomery's life and writing have made significant impacts on the world almost 80 years after her death. Like the article mentioned, throughout her life, Ellen Montgomery wrote 20 books, and almost all of them are set on Prince Edward Island. Many of those books would see the big screen beginning in 1919 with the release of an Anne of Green Gables silent film. 1934 saw the release of another Anne of Green Gables film, which was a major box office hit. In 1944, Anne of the Windy Poplars was released. In 1952, 1972, and 1975, there were miniseries released on television, and in 1979, an anime series was released. And that brings us up to the magical year that was 1985. Anne of Green Gables, the miniseries, was released on December 5th, 1985. It was rated G and ran for 195 minutes. When it aired on that snowy December day on CBC, which I don't have no idea if it was snowing, but whatever, it's Canada, it was the most popular program to ever air in Canada. How you like dem carrots? Anyways, it was initially released on Canada's CBC network, but would also be released on PBS and the Disney Channel. It was produced and directed by Kevin Sullivan. The second installment, Anne of Avonlea, was released in 1987, and the third installment, Anne of Green Gables, The Continuing Story, was released in 1998. The filming locations were around Ontario. The main location was just 15 minutes from Lakeside, Ontario, where Ellen Montgomery had lived with her family after they left PEI. Many of the iconic shots of Prince Edward Island were actually filmed on the island. The award-winning costumes in the first two films were designed by Martha Mann and were the perfect Edwardian style made to fit each character's personality. Further, many of the film's sets were constructed at the Sullivan Studio and Backlot, which is in Toronto. Sullivan and the crew wanted to make them as picturesque and accurate to the time period as possible. It took about 10 weeks to film the movie. 3,000 girls auditioned for the main character role of Anne Shirley, including a talented Canadian actress named Megan Follows. And that pronunciation is correct. It is Megan, not Megan. Kevin Sullivan wasn't originally sold on Megan Follows, who would go on to play the role, thank God, at first. Famed actress Katharine Hepburn, who was allegedly in talks to play Marilla but turned it down, had recommended the role of Anne to be played by her great-niece, Skylar Grant. Sullivan loved Grant for the role, but many executives from the film studio requested that Anne be played by a Canadian. After seeing thousands of girls audition for the role, they hadn't quite nailed down who was going to play Anne. Sullivan decided to take a look at Follow's audition tape, but it had been destroyed. So she was asked at the last minute to come back for another in-person audition. She was on a time crunch, so she was a bit flustered during her audition, and it was perfect. She got the part. Follows was just 16 when the first movie was filmed. She really wanted to play the role of Anne because she felt like Anne was one of the most important female Canadian characters to ever be written about for young girls and women. Follows once said of the role, quote, "I read it from the perspective at first of, what a fantastic character. I want to play this. Who is this character? What can I bring to this? What can I do? I get to be the number one in the story as a young woman. I'm not the sister of, I'm not the girlfriend of, I'm not the appendage of a boy's story. She is a story. Sign me up." End quote. Prior to her Anne of Green Gables role, Follows was a pretty accomplished actress at the old age of 16. She had starred in an episode of Facts of Life, which is freaking amazing, as well as other TV series like Matt and Jenny and Hangin' In, among many, many others prior to 1985. Megan's mother also had a role in the film, playing the role of the orphanage director, Mrs. Cadbury. Who knew? For the role of Spitfire Marilla Cuthbert, veteran actress Colleen Dewhurst got the part. Colleen Dewhurst was a Canadian native as well, born in Montreal in 1924. Fun fact, she grew up on Prince Edward Island. Director Kevin Sullivan had been thinking of Dewhurst as a possible role of Marilla for some time. He had really admired her work. You may also remember Dewhurst from her role in two of my favorite movies of many decades past, including The Boy Who Could Fly and Annie Hall. Richard Farnsworth, aka the man who everyone wanted to be their grandpa, was cast for the role of Matthew Cuthbert, Marilla's kind, caring, and endearing brother, with a fantastic mustache, aka soup strainer. Anyways, he was born on September 1st, 1920 in Los Angeles, California. He struggled in school growing up and dropped out at the age of 15 during the Great Depression and went to work as a stable boy at a polo barn. A few years after he started working at the barn, he got paid to ride ponies on camera, and this eventually led him to a career in Hollywood. Prior to his role in this notable film, he was a stuntman for 3 decades in films such as The Ten Commandments and Gone with the Wind. Perhaps you've heard of them? He didn't really start officially acting until he was in his 40s and 50s. I never realized that Farnsworth was a stuntman. Perhaps that's why his heart attack scene where he falls in the field at Green Gables is so realistic. Too soon? Too soon? Yeah, maybe. That's terrible that he had a heart attack. It's very sad. Anyways, Jonathan Crombie was cast in the role of Gilbert Blythe after a casting agent saw him in a high school production of The Wizard of Oz. Gilbert is initially Anne's nemesis in school, but eventually becomes the object of her affection. Skylar Grant, who we just talked about a moment ago, was cast as Diana Barry, who was Anne's best friend. She starred in All My Children prior to her role in Anne of Green Gables. Patricia Hamilton played Rachel Lynde, the pesky and incredibly nosy neighbor of the Cuthberts. She's the town gossip and a royal pain in the you-know-what, and Hamilton does an incredible job in the role. She was born on April 27, 1937, in Saskatchewan, Canada. Prior to Anne of Green Gables, she too starred on Hangin' In, and also The Last Polka, which I should probably see because I'm Polish, among many, many other acting credits. If you've seen the movie, even if it was a long time ago, then you know how incredibly well this movie was cast. I can't imagine anyone else playing these parts. I can't imagine different scenery and filming locations or music. This film is pure Canada comforting perfection. Of course, there are a plethora of additional characters in the books and the movies, but in the interest of time, we'll just focus on the main characters. Now that we have discussed the author and a bit about the cast and film, let's go over some lesser-known information about the phenomenon that is AOGG, the movie. Anne of Green Gables has created a huge draw to Prince Edward Island, especially from Japanese tourists. Approximately 3,500 Japanese tourists visit PEI each year, making it one of the largest sources of overseas tourism. As I mentioned earlier, in 1979, there was an anime film released, and the original book is required reading in many Japanese public schools and has been since the 50s. One interesting thing I learned about during my research is that at one point in Hokkaido, Japan, there used to be an area called Japan's Canadian World Theme Park, which used to draw tens of thousands of visitors, and they had a replica of Anne of Green Gables' farmhouse as well as Canadian-esque row houses there. Within the park, you could row a boat in a man-made pond or take a trip aboard the steam locomotive that traveled around the perimeter of the park. The theme park went bankrupt in 1997, so the city adopted it and renamed it Canadian World, themed around PEI and Avonlea. Here you can find a Victorian church and iron street lamps. I'll post a link to a video I found on YouTube about it. It's quite fascinating. Further, what is also part of the appeal of Anne Green Gables to Japanese fans is because the character of Anne Shirley is filled with kawaii, which roughly translates as romantic, beautiful, and cute. Although it is one of the first scenes in the movie, the scene where Mrs. Hammond brings Anne to the orphanage was filmed last. Colleen Dewhurst said Anne of Green Gables is one of the first books she remembers her mother reading to her when she was a little girl. Her agent actually advised her to not take the role of Marilla, which I assume was grounds for his or her firing. What an idiot. As I mentioned earlier, the costumes for the movie were absolutely incredible and authentic to the time period, down to the corsets that the women had to wear. Apparently, Fallows and Dewhurst couldn't stand wearing them and actually burned them after filming. I think Dewhurst lit a cigarette off that fire. Okay, that's not true, but she was definitely a smoker, and that's for sure. You can tell when Marilla laughs. That's a smoker's laugh. Anyways, Kevin Sullivan hadn't read the Anne of Green Gables books when he was approached about making the film. During my time as president of the Anne of Green Gables fan club, me and some of the members discovered a drinking game based on the film adaptation of AOGG. On foreveryoungadult.com. Here's a game which is called How Dare You Drink. And I actually never played this game, but I think it's hilarious. Take one drink every time Anne loses her temper. Each time Marilla rolls her eyes, this one alone will have your liver shaking its bedraggled fist at you. Whenever Matthew interferes, Gilbert has been added to a scene to build romantic tension, i.e. when Josie Pye dares Anne to walk the ridgepole on the roof. Each time the word bosom is used, when Anne says the word tragical. Toast, raise your glass and say to puff sleeves every time said sleeves are seen or mentioned. Take a shot when, after snubbing her, Gilbert steals Anne's dance card, the best added scene not in the book, also the scene that made a whole generation of us long for dance cards. For tomorrow is always fresh, with no mistakes in it yet. For green hair. The second time Gilbert calls Anne carrots with his voice all husky. Chug, when Diana is drinking the raspberry cordial. And finally, pour one out for Matthew. Sob. And speaking of Matthew and his unfortunate heart attack on the field of Green Gables, apparently Colleen Dewhurst insisted that there was a kind of dramatic scene between herself and the character of Anne following Matthew's funeral. She felt like there should be a moment of connection, sort of a deeper level between Marilla and Anne. And so Sullivan was able to write that part into the movie kind of at the last minute. And apparently it was so moving when Marilla tells Anne that, you know, she's always loved her as her own, that the crew had to take a lunch break because they were just so deeply moved by that moment, which is a very significant scene in the movie. At the same time that I was in the AOGG fan club, every song, I swear, in the music industry at that time seemed to be a remix. So you'd be listening to some hip-hop song, for example, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, somebody would yell, "Remix!" And the song's tempo would change. I, too, enjoyed a good remix, so I geniusly created the Marilla remix, if you will, that went a little something like this. That was my brooch, brooch, brooch. You had no right to take it, take it, take it. You could also do that with other scenes from the movie, like, Diana will never, never, never see you again, again, again. Or, don't eat it, Miss Stacy, Stacy, Stacy. Those were all really stupid. Anyways, you are a true AOGG fan, if you know what I am referring to. I'm not sure if this is still happening at PEI because of COVID, but at one time you could see Anne and Gilbert, the musical, on stage at a theater on the island. I would pay good money to see that show. Maybe they do the Marilla remix. Probably not. Anyways, you can also shop at the Anne of Green Gables gift shop on the island or take Matthew's carriage ride, which makes sure to go past the Lake of Shining Waters. You can also take a literary tour and learn more about Ella Montgomery. Following the 1985, 87, and 98 releases of Anne of Green Gables and the continuing stories, several other adaptations have been released. For example, in 2016, Ella Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables was released as a television series. In 2017, Anne of Green Gables, The Good Stars was released, as well as Anne of Green Gables, Fire and Dew, and Netflix released a series that year as well called Anne with an E. It has been over 100 years since Anne of Green Gables was first published, and it's clear that the character of Anne Shirley continues to inspire generation after generation. I hope you've enjoyed this look back at the story of Anne of Green Gables and the film with the same name released in 1985. Each of the main cast enjoyed successful careers in the entertainment industry following their roles in the Anne of Green Gables movies. Megan Follows has acted on dozens and dozens of TV series like Heartland, CSI, and many others. She's also narrated the audiobook versions of the Anne of Green Gables books. I need to listen to those. She is a mother to two children, a daughter named Lila, and a son named Russell. Colleen Dewhurst continued to act until the early 1990s, primarily in TV series and TV movies. In 1990, she found out that she had cervical cancer, and due to her Christian Science beliefs, she refused any sort of treatment. She passed away on August 22, 1991, at age 67. Follows once said of her fondest memory of doing Anne of Green Gables, quote, "Colleen Dewhurst is coming to mind. She was such a great old broad of the theater. She was a true thespian, the real deal, and she'd be there smoking her Carltons right up until we were ready to film." End quote. I can definitely see that. And I'm not really sure why I keep referencing Colleen Dewhurst and smoking, but I just find that funny for some reason. Richard Farnsworth continued to act up until his last film in 1999 called The Straight Story, which is a story about an elderly gentleman who rides his tractor across the country to try and repair his relationship with his brother that has become strained. I have seen that movie, and it is quite endearing if I remember correctly. Farnsworth died on October 7, 2000, at age 80. He had been diagnosed with terminal cancer and decided to take his life via a self-inflicted gunshot wound. I can't remember if I knew that this is how Farnsworth died, but either way, that was certainly very sad to be reminded of. He will certainly be remembered for all of his significant contributions to the film industry, especially how kind and genuine he was in Anne of Green Gables. While we're on the topic of talking about sad things, let's discuss Jonathan Crombie, who played Gilbert for a second. Although he didn't originally think he was going to be a professional actor, he too had dozens and dozens of post-Anne of Green Gables acting credits. Coincidentally, his mother's name is Shirley Anne. Amazing. On April 15th, 2015, Crombie died unexpectedly from a brain aneurysm. He was only 48 years old. You can honor his character's memory by purchasing Gilbert Blythe cologne or mug on the Anne of Green Gables website. Skylar Grant, who played Diana Barry, went on to attend Columbia University, where she studied history and theater. Allegedly, Megan Follows and Jonathan Crombie visited her in college, and Grant invited her roommate to join the trio. Her roommate, who was a moron, I just love the word moron. Anyways, her roommate, who is a moron, declined the invitation because she had never seen the movies and didn't know who her two friends were. Big mistake. I bet that is that woman's biggest regret of her entire life. I know it would be mine. What a moron. Grant doesn't really act very much anymore, but she is a yoga master, yogi, whatever you want to call it. She has her own YouTube channel. She's like jacked like a true yogi. And she also does some film editing and has three children. Patricia Hamilton, who played Rachel Lynde, has continued to act post Anne of Green Gables, with her most recent credit coming in 2017. She has been a part of many of the Anne of Green Gables spin-offs and additional series. So whether you are a fan of the books, the movies, or both, I think it's clear that there are a lot of life lessons we can take from L.M. Montgomery and Anne Shirley. Anne taught us that everyone deserves a second chance. She also taught us that we don't need 20 friends, but instead we just need one true bosom friend. She also taught us the power of imagination and pursuing our goals, which is still relevant today, more than 100 years after the first book was published. Here are a few of my favorite Anne quotes. "Tomorrow is always fresh, with no mistakes in it." And, "My life is a perfect graveyard of buried hopes." That's a sentence I read once, and I say it over to comfort myself in these times that try the soul. Although there are certainly some tragic circumstances, to say the least, that happened between both L.M. Montgomery and some of the cast of the movie, I think it's a good reminder that no one is perfect, and that no matter how rich or famous someone is, many of us are coping with grief, sadness, and just challenging times. It's sort of like that quote that you see everywhere, but it is very true. Be kind, because everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. If you are enjoying the Pop Culture Retrospective, please subscribe and rate the show. Please tell your friends and family about the show and share it on social media. I hope you will join me for my next show, where we will be discussing the famed artist, Keith Haring. Until then, be kind, be safe, and hold on to your memories. We'll be right back.